Good morning. First of all, I want to say thank you. This is an incredible sight up here. Appreciate your hospitality and bringing all these groceries. These are going to go to a lot of people in need and go to a lot of good. Nathan is traveling this morning. He is gone. He is doing a memorial service for someone in his family. So you are stuck with me today. And I have been dealing all week with some kind of a cold or sinusy thing. How many of you feel my pain? Yeah, so we're going to see what happens. Either I run out of voice or I run out of sermon, one of the two, and then I'll be done. So this is my second time to fill in for a preacher of ours who was preaching through the Sermon on the Mount. So I'm going to be continuing Nathan's series on the Sermon on the Mount. The first time I did this, I was given the subject of lust. Today, I've been given the subject of money. So I don't know what I did to deserve this. Conspiracy theory or something involved here in handing me all of these kind of tricky subjects. Because money is kind of a sensitive subject, right? We don't want people to tell us what to do with our money. Well, let me let you in on the secret right away. This is not necessarily about money. So our sermon this morning is about more than just money. As Jesus does throughout the whole Sermon on the Mount, he takes an issue with which we are very familiar, and he shows us what's really going on here. He takes these issues, these problems, these things that we're all familiar with, and he says, I want to show you what is really at the heart of this subject. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 20, we have the key to understanding all of the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of God. That's a strange thing, and it makes us pay attention. I want to enter. I want to be a part of the kingdom of God. So what does it mean that my righteousness must exceed that of the Pharisees? The Pharisees were very concerned about the letter of the law, right? But that's really all that they were concerned about. And so you have Jesus taking these passages and he says, you have heard it was said this, but let me tell you what that really means. Let me show you exactly what it means to have a righteousness that exceeds that of the Pharisees. And so he says, you shall not murder. Okay, has anybody murdered anybody in here today? Good job, we did it, right? I mean, most of us are not struggling with driving home today. Man, I really want to kill that guy. I mean, maybe some of you are, and if so, you should come forward and we'll talk about that. But most of us don't have that problem. However, he says it's not just about the deed, it is also about what is in your heart. He says, don't even be angry. And if you are angry, take steps to make it right. And he says, you have heard it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But let me tell you, whoever looks at someone with lust in their heart has already committed adultery in their heart. See, Jesus isn't concerned so much with the mechanics. And when he talks about prayer and fasting, when he talks about giving to the needy, he's not so much concerned with how it is done, but what is in your heart when you do it. He is concerned about the position of your heart. And so why would it be any different that we come to our passage today and he all of a sudden would be talking about something besides what is in your heart? So if you have your Bible, we're going to read Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 24. Jesus says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal. But instead, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body, and so if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad or evil, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And so Jesus is counseling us to be aware of the position of our heart. And when we speak of heart, we're not talking about the thing that pumps blood throughout our body, but instead we are talking about that biblical idea that the heart is the core, the very center, the very identity of who we are. On the surface, this text does appear to be about money equals bad, but that would be a very shallow reading, and it would contradict other instances in which money can be put to a good use, such as providing for the needy. As always, the issue, the core, is us. Treasure is commonly defined as wealth, riches that are stored or accumulated, especially in the form of gold or silver. Or it's anything that we value or hold as precious. As a verb, it means to put away, to lay aside as security for the future. Jesus warns that all of this is earthly. The money, the wealth, the possessions, the career, the fame, the reputation, all of these things are fleeting. They are subject to decay and theft. They can be stolen. They can be taken away from us, and ultimately they leave us unfulfilled because they lack the ability to make us whole. Wall Street Journal columnist Robert Frank wrote the book Richistan. I love that. Richistan. It is a travel guide through the parallel universe of the ultra-rich in America. Complete with private jets, 30,000 square foot homes, and probably alligator skin toilet seats. I don't know if that's a thing, but what are they going to spend their money on, right? And throughout this, he interviews the top and the most wealthy in America, and he was surprised to learn something that was common amongst them all. They were all plagued, riddled by anxiety. They even had support groups where the ultra-rich would gather to talk about how anxious they were that they could lose everything. They were worried about running out of money. When he surveyed them and asked how much it would take for them to feel secure, a person who was worth $1 million said, "It would take at least twice that much for me to feel financially secure." For someone who was worth $10 million, they needed at least twice that much. And for the person who was worth $100 million, they said, "I would need at least $200 million to really make me feel secure." Wealth is no guarantee of safety. It is no guarantee of our security. And Jesus points out it is all subject to decay. It is all just things and stuff and junk. And the Bible uses this word treasure in a very different way. In some instances, it does refer to wealth stored in the temple or palace treasury, but more often it is used metaphorically. In Proverbs chapter 2 and Colossians chapter 2, treasure is used to define wisdom and knowledge. In Exodus chapter 19, Israel is God's treasured possession. And in the New Testament, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a treasure that has been hidden. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul describes the gospel message as a treasure that has been hidden in jars of clay. Typically, when treasure is used in Scripture, it has a much deeper meaning than simply riches or material wealth. On the whole, the Bible is very critical of this idea of a craving and a pursuit of wealth. But treasure is cast in a favorable light because treasure is something that we value highly. Things that mean something to us or that we have invested a lot into. It is the value that we invest in something that makes it treasure. I've learned this lesson over the years, but most recently on our trip to Beaumont. If you didn't know, we took a group of university students to Beaumont, Texas to serve victims of Hurricane Harvey. This is my third trip that I took like this, having gone to Moore and New Orleans after Katrina happened. And we had a couple different people doing a bunch of different jobs, and some of it was replacing sheetrock and insulation in folks' homes. And for some of us, it was going to a home that had not been opened and since it had been flooded. And we'd put masks and gloves on, and we would enter into this home, and it was unbelievable what we would find. In some instances, I saw baseball cards that were atop chandeliers. We saw bedroom furniture that was in the attic, things that was just moved all over the place, and everything was swollen and musty and moldy and smelly, and it just looked like trash. But we knew and we made sure that we, all of our volunteers knew that this wasn't just junk. These were things. This was a person's home that at one point they had lived and loved inside. And so we would say, anything that you bring out, make sure you take it by the homeowner and say, is this something that you would like to save? And all the computers and the TVs and all the things like that, they all went on the trash heap. It was things like photo albums, random little knickknacks that they wanted to save because they had value of a different sort. They had value because it was something that somebody had given them that they loved, or something that they had treasured a long time. There's somebody brought out this old school ice cream maker, right? And it was beyond repair and it was beyond use, but the person wanted to save it because it belonged to their great-great-grandma. And so there are things that we treasure that aren't just about material goods. They are about what we value, what we invest ourselves into that can become our treasures as well. So when Jesus warns us about storing up treasures in heaven, or storing up treasures on earth, it is a much wider category than mere physical goods. It is also the things that we pay attention to, the things that we value. It can also be success, security, happiness, even life ourself. You see, treasure is the focus of our attention. Our treasures are the things that we spend our energy pouring into. It's our imagination's resourcefulness. It's what we long for. It's what we love. Those are what our treasures are. And instead of building up or focusing on treasures here on earth, Jesus encourages us instead, in verse 20, to focus on building up our treasure in heaven. To focus, to value, to love, to cherish the things that matter eternally, where rust and decay and moth and theft can never reach. And it's important that we do this because in verse 21 he tells us that where our treasure is, there our heart will be also. And remember, when we speak of heart, it's the thing that defines us, right? It is the very core, the very center of our being. So what he's saying is, what we treasure defines who we are. I want to come back to that idea in a minute. And then we have this passage in 22 through 23 that just doesn't quite seem to fit. The eye is the lamp of the body. I can imagine his listeners are thinking, wait, what? I mean, you've just talked about storing up your treasures, not in earth, but in heaven. And now all of a sudden we're talking about the lamp and the eye and all of this stuff. What does this mean? He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad or evil, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? So this is tucked in between two passages that mention treasure and mention money in verse 24. And it doesn't really seem to go together. Because our common understanding of how the eye works, and I'm not an optometrist, but basically, right, it's the idea that our eyes are windows that receive light, right? And it filters that light from an outside source, and it translates it into some sort of signal, and eventually it reaches our brain and it creates some kind of image and signals, right? But we don't really think about the eye as being the source of that light. That is a more ancient understanding. In the ancient world, it was common to think of the eye as being the lamp, the source of illumination. But what does it illuminate? Does the eye shine light onto the world, thus projecting what is within us? Or does the eye project its illumination on the inside? Given the context and the way that Jesus structures this, I think we have good reason to believe that Jesus is saying that the eye, as a lamp, illuminates the body. Therefore, whatever it is we look at, whatever we focus our attention on, whatever we treasure, shapes who we are inside, reveals who we are inside, our inner character, our inner heart. And Jesus uses two words to describe this. One, he says, it could be good, or sound, or more precisely, sincere. The contrasting term in verse 23 is evil. And the word can also convey a sense of jealousy or selfishness. Among the Greek-speaking Jews, the contrast would have focused on generosity and a lack of envy as opposed to selfishness and greed. But I think we need to resist creating a simple moralism out of this about making good choices. Because he is commenting on the behavior of one whose life inevitably becomes aligned with our inner wants and desires, the longing of our hearts. He's not simply saying you should make good choices about how you spend your money. What he's saying is what we focus on, what we pay attention to, what we give ourselves over to, inevitably our whole life becomes in tune and in line with that. And so if we are looking at things, if we are paying attention to, if we are focusing on earthly things, that is how we will be shaped and it is how we will be formed. So the question is, do you really know what it is you want on the inside? What is it that you spend the most time doing? Do you honestly, truly know what it is you want? And that is the question that is really at the heart of this whole teaching. When we read verse 21 alongside 24, I think this becomes clear. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. No one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. I think that this reveals an assumption that is at play throughout this entire teaching. And that is, what we treasure, what we pay attention to, what we shine our light on consistently defines who we are. Human life is not self-sufficient. We find the meaning of our lives outside of ourselves. Human life inescapably serves something. And what it serves gives it meaning. The choice is not whether we will serve. We are all serving something. The choice is what or whom. Jesus says you cannot serve two masters. It is not a choice that we will be serving something, but is our choice what we will serve. For some, it can be our careers. We pour ourselves into our work, climbing the ladder, piling up success. But what is that except something that can be taken away? For others, maybe it's our status or our popularity, and we manage our social media accounts with spin and devotion that rival the greatest campaign manager. But what is that except more of the same? Just before this passage, when speaking about giving to the needy, praying and fasting, Jesus recycles this phrase, they have received their reward. Over and over again, he says, they have received their reward, and is referring to people who live their life in order to be seen by others. People who live their life storing up treasures in heaven. And he says, you know what? They are receiving their reward in the here and the now. If that is what you care about, if that is what you most long for and desire, you are going to receive your reward. And it will end here. But instead, if you choose to live your life differently, Jesus says our Father in heaven will reward us. So how do we do this? How do we go about living a life that stores up treasure in heaven? It is about realigning our wants with God's. It is about realigning the things that we wish for and love and long for with the things that God desires. And maybe it takes a little bit of retraining ourselves to do that. In Matthew chapter 6, it kicks off a section of the Sermon on the Mount in which Jesus is talking about acts of righteousness. He warns us to examine our motivation for doing these things, and included here are giving to the poor, prayer, and fasting. These are the kinds of things that Jesus says we ought to be doing. So we need to retrain and relearn what is truly important to us. And we need to do an audit of our lives. We need to take a step back and ask ourselves, what do we spend the most time thinking about, worrying about, casting the lamp of our body towards? What are we being shaped by? What do we spend our time doing, watching, participating in? Maybe we don't realize it, but our wants and our desires are aligned more along the lines of what the NFL is doing, or what the stock market is doing, or what the new TV show is on. Maybe we don't realize it, but our lives are being slowly shifted towards a focus on earthly things, and we forget about the things that truly matter. The question we should ask is, does the unconscious flow of our life naturally follow the script of storing up our treasure in heaven, or do they seem more geared to the treasures of earth? And there's a really easy test to figure this out. If we look at Galatians chapter 5, Paul spends a little bit of time telling us exactly what we should do to know whether or not we are on track or not. In chapter 5 of Galatians, starting in verse 16, he says, "I say that you should walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the desires of the flesh are very obvious." And he lists all of these things. It's very obvious when you decide to live your life in a certain way, aligned a certain way. But then he says, "But the fruit of the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit is love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law." So what is he saying? He's saying if you want to know if your life is in line with the Spirit, if your life is in line with God, are these things evident? Fruits of the Spirit are not things that we should maybe put on a list and say, "I got to go out and I got to accomplish gentleness today." I mean, that's not a bad thing to do. But what Paul is suggesting here is if you want to know if your life is on track, if you want to know if you're living your life according to the Spirit, these things will be present. Because it's what you're focusing on. It's where our treasure is. It will reflect who we are and what we care about. The inner life that guides the outer is evident by the fruit that we bear. Osceola McCarty was an African-American woman from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. She left school after sixth grade to take care of a relative who was sick. After that, she went to work as a washerwoman. And for 75 years, she washed and she ironed and she folded the laundry of the wealthy bankers, lawyers, and doctors of town, earning just pennies. But she tried to put away whatever she could, eventually starting a little savings account at the First Mississippi National Bank. McCarty lived a simple life. Her treasures on earth were few. She lived in a modest framed house just blocks from the campus of the University of Southern Mississippi. She didn't get an air conditioner in her house until she was well into her 80s, but only turned it on when company came over. She never owned a car. She walked a mile each way to and from the grocery store. She went to church every Sunday carrying a Bible held together with scotch tape. When she turned 87 years old, her hands were too gnarled with arthritis to continue working, and so she retired. She put her affairs in order and decided what she wanted to do with the little that she had been able to accumulate. In 1995, the development office of the University of Southern Mississippi received a phone call from the bank. The bank had a check for them from one Osceola McCarty, a check for $150,000. No one there had ever heard of her. She had never set foot on campus. This washerwoman, who had never gone to high school, let alone college, gave away virtually every dollar she had to create a scholarship fund for minority students. The gift made front page headlines. She was invited to the White House. She received an honorary degree from Harvard University. Shortly before she died, she was interviewed and she was asked, "Why didn't you spend the money on yourself?" She smiled and said, "I am spending it on myself." Storing up treasures in heaven is about a way of living, a way of organizing and arranging your life. It is about priorities and where your wants, your longings, and your desires truly are. Jesus didn't spell out here exactly what he means when he says we should store up ourselves treasures in heaven, but I suspect that Mrs. McCarty got it just about right. I want to encourage you this morning to take an audit of your own life. Where do you spend most of your time? Where do you spend most of your thought and your worry and your concern? If you were to take a look at your life, would it look more like the fruits of the Spirit? Or would it reveal something a little different? I pray this morning that you would take some time to think about how you spend your days, your weeks, how you spend your time, what you care about, what you worry about, what you align yourself with. And I pray that it might follow more naturally what this looks like. People who are willing to give up their resources for the sake of others. People who are willing to give up their time for the benefit of someone else. Does your concern align with God's, or does it align with the world's? I think that is really at the heart of what Jesus' message here is about. And His encouragement and my encouragement is that we think more about what it means to shine our light on the treasures of heaven than on the treasures of earth. If we can do anything for you this morning, if Hillcrest can help you in any way, provide prayer for you, support for you, maybe you want to give your life to Christ in baptism, whatever your need may be, please come while we stand and sing our invitation song.